Okay. Welcome to all of you. We are starting with our meeting dealing with the ratification of the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance. Honorable members, we have in front of us a delegation from the South African Human Rights Commission. They will be doing the presentation for us, after which we'll then engage and hopefully ratify today. I think it is important that we, if possible, that we ratify so that we, at least we finalize this matter before we rise in about 2 weeks. We are hoping, I'm told committees will be going on until the 26th. So honorable members, we are still, for the purposes of a quorum, we're still running short of one member. Our quorum is 7. However, we will start, the member is on her way, honorable Sindhuza. So we'll start with the presentations, and by the time that we must take the decision, if we do, we will then would have constituted the quorum. Ladies, it's up to you. Perhaps I should just quickly introduce myself and the team, and you can follow. I'm Agrif Stisenzo Makama from the ANC. Can we start with you, Honorable Muhammad? Start with you, just brief introductions and come this way.
Oh, okay. I'm Honorable Stevens Mukhalapa, Democratic Alliance.
I'm Kenneth Mugu, Democratic Alliance.
Thanks, Loretta Jacobus, African National Congress.
Mututuz Manana, ANC.
Fatima Hashej, ANC.
I have forgotten to quickly deal with the matter of apologies. We have apologies from Honorable Dr. Kurnov, Honorable Mahau, Honorable Olumisa, Standard, Honorable Malchas, and Honorable Dudley, who could not attend today's meeting. Over to you.
Thank you. Start straight away with introducing myself. I am Judith Cohen. I'm the Head of Programme for Parliamentary and International Affairs at the South African Human Rights Commission. And alongside me is Anthea van der Berg, a Senior Researcher. Anthea will be doing the presentation today after I have said a few words of welcome. Just to say it is an absolute pleasure to be invited once again to this committee. Didn't quite realize what an onerous task we have today, and that during this meeting a decision will be taken around possible ratification of the African Charter. This is certainly very exciting, and it is a privilege to be here today and to be part of this process, which really is history in its making. I think thus far, from some of the research we were doing in preparing to come here today, there are 6 countries, unless another country has ratified since the 22nd of July 2010, who have ratified the Charter. Just to recap, it's Ghana, Lesotho, Uganda, Sierra Leone, Ethiopia, and Mauritania thus far. I think we could be very proud if South Africa could be the 7th country to ratify the Charter, and as we know, we need 15 ratifications for the Charter to come into being. Essentially, what our brief year for today has been is to brief members of Parliament on what are the implications of ratifying this Charter, and what are the possible roles as parliamentarians that you could play. Essentially, though, we will point out that the decision to ratify is a political decision at the end of the day. But in coming to that decision, members of Parliament need to have their eyes wide open as to whether there will be any new obligations or responsibilities that ratification will bring. So what we have done is we have put together a presentation where we are aware that you've already been briefed by international relations. So we're just pulling out a few more clauses for discussion. And we really hope that after the presentation we have given, that there can then be more interaction and that it will create the necessary space for members to have a discussion, to really get to grips with what it is that you're doing when you ratify this charter. One of the main themes of the presentation will be to demonstrate that particularly for South Africa, there really isn't much which is new for us. We are always tremendously proud about our wonderful constitution, about the incredible laws that we have in this country. And really what this charter will be doing is really just reinforcing those things that we do already have. There may be aspects where some tinkering could be done, but there's nothing major jumping out in the charter. And then also just, I think, the other theme of the presentation will be, what is the role of members of parliament, as to what it is that your role is to ensure that there is adequate promotion of this very important instrument. And I think when you read some of the narratives and the reports around around this charter, there's a lot that has been written that not enough has been done to promote it, and that it's such an important document for Africa. It's an African document. So we'd like to leave you as well with some ideas as to what is your role as parliamentarians to really promote this charter. I think with that, I'll hand over to Anthea. Thank you.
Judith has given a comprehensive introduction of how it is that we're going to be looking at this particular charter. And I thought it would be useful for us just maybe to reflect on the other African charters that we've ratified to date before discussing this charter, so that we can contextualize this discussion in terms of the African charters ratified by South Africa. South Africa, I think, showed its commitment by ratifying the African Charter on Human and People's Rights in July 1996. This is really the foundational charter in terms of the African regional human rights system. I think South Africa has also showed a firm commitment around children's rights, not only as it ratified in the international realm and the UN realm, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, but it also ratified the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child in January 2000. And then South Africa has shown a clear commitment in terms of gender, both in respect to CEDAW, that we, you know, an instrument that we've ratified in the UN, and then also in terms of the protocol to the African Charter of Human and People's Rights on the Rights of Women in Africa. And I think particularly in this particular charter, the rights of women is raised quite substantively, and the rights of vulnerable groups, which makes it a really unique document. I think also, I mean, I'm going to touch a bit on the issue around civil participation, civil society participation in this charter, which also makes it really unique in terms of looking at accountability, transparency, equity, and ultimately governance in South Africa. I think to kick off, you know, we need to also understand that the charter is very different to a treaty body. The charter is really looking at promoting human rights in Africa. That's its aim. Whereas a treaty body really looks at enforcement and implementation of those rights in various countries and state parties having to report on those rights. The current status of the ratification of this particular charter, Judith already mentioned some of the ratifications that have taken place. There are also 29 signatures and 3 deposits. This document was came about in January 2007, and we would need 15 ratifications, after which 30 days thereafter it will actually come into force. So as Judith indicated, I think it's an excellent opportunity to discuss today, you know, all the good reasons why it is that we should be ratifying this particular instrument. The main body of this particular charter focuses obviously on free and fair elections, but there are also other pertinent rights that it raises. And I think it is important to also look at the balance between this particular African Charter and the instruments that we've ratified on an international level, looking particularly at the types of rights that this particular charter encompasses. And I think very importantly, it really talks a lot about civil and political rights, freedom of expression, freedom of movement, etc. And in this instance, we have ratified the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights in the international realm. However, the discussion around civil and political rights remains a bit vacant when we have failed to ratify the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. And I would like to raise that before this committee today. I think it is important in light of today's discussion around African human rights to be taking a very firm view and a very firm ideal around the economic, social and cultural rights and the ratification of that particular UN instrument, which we have not ratified today. By ratifying this particular charter, it will definitely demonstrate a commitment to democratic governance. Is also that we're participating in the African peer review mechanism, and I think that's excellent in terms of where South Africa is. We've been reviewed and our progress has been reviewed on the African continent, and obviously this charter would complement that particular mechanism very nicely in terms of Africa. And a bit later I'm going to reflect on how it is that we could possibly also utilize that mechanism in terms of looking at more effective ways of reporting to these bodies. What we've done is we've taken out specific provisions that we thought would be important in terms of the human rights context. And we thought that we would highlight some of the really important provisions and look at the implications, possible implications in terms of South Africa and this particular committee. And the first such provision would be Article 8.2. This particular article refers to vulnerable groups. And it says that state parties need to adopt legislative and administrative measures to guarantee the rights of women, ethnic minorities, migrants, people with disabilities, refugees, and displaced persons, as well as other marginalized and vulnerable social groups. I think this is a very important provision. It speaks very nicely to our vulnerable groups, but it also speaks very nicely to the other instruments in the international realm, as I've mentioned earlier, that we have already ratified. Particularly and more recently, South Africa ratified the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and showed a very strong commitment around protecting the rights of persons with disabilities. We've also ratified the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, and that particular convention speaks to hate crimes in South Africa and also assists with the high levels of xenophobia in South Africa. Also, I think importantly, the Convention Against Torture. The only problem with this convention is that South Africa today has not domesticated the legislation around torture, and so that is certainly something that we need to look at. And I think that bears relevance for today's meeting as well. Whilst we might ratify instruments, there are also obligations attached to that ratification. And so we need to bear in mind that in many instances we might need to domesticate the international African instrument in terms of our own legislation. And then, of course, we need to enhance our programs and policies within our government departments to ensure that we're truly reflecting the instrument and the articles contained in terms of ratification. In terms of vulnerable groups, however, I think certainly for this committee it would be important to take note of the fact that we have not ratified the International Convention on the Rights of Migrant Workers. I think this is a very important convention in terms of issues related to labour brokers, migrant workers in South Africa, and child labour. I think certainly it's something that needs to be put on the agenda quite urgently. Also, the International Convention on Forced Disappearances. All of these conventions really dealing with vulnerable groups, and this particular chart are looking at vulnerable groups specifically. We've noted that this article doesn't include children, but we're suspecting that that is because the main body and the spirit of the charter is related to CNC election processes and that children would not be required to vote. The next provision that we're wanting to look at is also strengthening the organs of the union. And we think that particularly the committee can play quite an important role. Previously, state parties have been accused of not paying subscription fees, etc. And it is important that there's adequate funding and resources for these particular organs. But I think more than that, often countries don't realize that they make an important strides in terms of the work that they're already doing. And so when we ratify an African document, the important thing is often to look at how it is that we can share our own expertise and around programs, campaigns, and policies and legislation that we've developed with other African countries. And so the one way to strengthen the organs of the Union for this committee for South Africa would be around sharing expertise. I think we have valuable programs of best practice and issues around really good campaigns and strategies that we've embarked on, which can be shared and learned by other countries. Also, our participation in reporting. I'm not going to talk too much about this because I have at least two or three slides just focusing on reporting and how it is that the committee needs to consider issues around reporting. And then, of course, this brings up the very real issue of oversight of Parliament and how it is that Parliament can interact more significantly around some of these treaties, particularly when it comes to reports and actually investigating reports, calling government departments and officials in and really commenting and providing expertise on the reports that get sent out. Social and economic policies, Article 9. State parties undertake to design and implement social and economic policies and programs that promote sustainable development and human security. This particular article, in our view, might require a review of some of the policies and programs already in place. It might require reviewing policies and programs of the Department of Trade and Industry, for instance, social development and various other government departments. But once again, it also raises this idea around the ratification of the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. Article 12 of this charter speaks to a culture of democracy. And this particular article also very nicely sets out steps, which I think would be useful for this committee, particularly to consider in terms of how it is that it would look at the implementation of this particular charter. Because it speaks to implementing programs and carrying out activities which are designed to promote democratic principles and to consolidate a culture of democracy and peace. And looking at this, it says that by doing this, you need to promote good governance. You also need to strengthen political institutions to entrench that culture of democracy and peace. And I guess it is for this committee to really look at these clauses and to look at how it is that they would go about strengthening political institutions and promoting good governance overall. Very nicely in this particular article, it also speaks about creating conducive conditions for civil society to exist and operate within the law. I think South Africa can be proud. It has an NPO Act, which falls under the Department of Social Development. That particular act provides good governance structures for NGOs and civil society organizations, because the requirements are that it has a constitution and it has a board of directors, and so that civil society organizations need to then entrench democratic governance, and by so doing, by interacting with parliament and government departments, then also promotes governance. But more than that, that civil society participation is encouraged in this particular charter. And lastly, that is an integration of civic education in the educational curricula, and that appropriate programs and activities are developed. And here, it may require that the committee looks at the programs and policies and curricula of the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education specifically, and other government bodies dealing with education. team, which speaks directly to our organization. For instance, in a Chapter 9 organization, it mentions the establishment and functioning of public institutions. As Judith said earlier, a lot of this charter is not new. It doesn't require us to re-establish bodies and programs, etc. We're already in a good place. We have Chapter 9 institutions. I think, however, the challenge around Chapter 9 institutions would be to ensure that adequate funding and resources are available for the Chapter 9 institutions so that they do have sufficient independence and they are able to promote and support democracy within South Africa. I also think it's important that the relevant legislative framework is in place. For example, with the South African Human Rights Commission, we have the Human Rights Commission Amendment Act. But this is still not in line with the Constitution, and amendment is still underway. And without that really firm legislative framework and the proper funding and resources, it makes the work of these independent bodies really difficult. In light of all the provisions mentioned in this particular charter related to CNP elections, it would also be necessary to look at the Electoral Act, the Municipal Electoral Act 27 of 2007. But more than that, to also allocate responsibilities to the Independent Electoral Commission and to look at the Department of Home Affairs. And I think that's really the role of this committee, is to look at how it is and what it is that these particular departments would carry in light of the really key principles in this particular charter. We've spoken a bit earlier around the exchange of experiences, and our submission was that it would be excellent if this committee and South Africa were to share some of its really key learning experiences and best practices with other African countries. And we'd like to pose a question to this committee as the Human Rights Commission. The question is, what will the role of the committee be in sharing its experiences with African counterparts on the role it plays in promoting this particular charter? And I think that could lead to further discussion within this committee in terms of its oversight role. We mentioned civil society participation earlier, and Article 28 really encapsulates this and says that state parties shall ensure and promote strong partnerships and dialogue between government, civil society, and the private sector. I think this is quite novel. It's a novel inclusion in a charter to be including civil society participation so clearly. But it's also very encouraging. Civil society has been left out and been excluded largely in respect of the African Commission at the African Summit and the nominations to the African Court. There's been this history of civil society exclusion, and I think that it is imperative also for this committee to realize that often when we are doing reports to the UN or to the African Commission, civil society is often excluded. And we need to understand that they play a very important role in terms of bringing the nuances to that report, that there has to be consultation with civil society role players. They do have a lot of valuable expertise, and they conduct valuable research that contributes and can assist government in drafting its reports. As I mentioned earlier, gender of South Africa has done well in respect of gender, but there's obviously still room for improvement. Article 29 recognizes the crucial role of women in development and democracy, but it goes further and it places an obligation on state parties to create the necessary conditions for the full and active participation of women in decision-making and the electoral process. I think we've done well as South Africa thus far. We have a high number of women MPs. We've also ratified the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. And we also, have this fantastic 50-50 campaign. And in terms of talking to sharing experiences and best practice, certainly this is the type of campaign that can be shared on the African continent. And I think it is something that other African countries can also learn from. Coming down to reporting, South Africa has a history of late reporting, both in the UN and on the African continent. And Article 49 requires state parties to submit a report every 2 years. This is by no means a new provision. Most UN bodies require reporting to be this frequent. The African Charter, in fact, in Article 62, requires biannual reporting. Just to highlight the lateness of our reporting around the African Commission, South Africa's initial report was submitted in October 1998, and then the second report in May 2005, which then combined the third and fourth report, and was then considered in December 2005. This is not an ideal situation. We don't really want two reports combined into one. One report covers a two-year period, which really reflects on quite a lot of program activity, legislative development and policy developments within a country. And at the moment, current reports are outstanding. So I think for this committee, in ratifying this particular charter, we really need to look at some proactive measures around how it is that we deal with reporting in South Africa. And we've come up with some really key ideas around how it is that the committee can look at this. We thought it was important to first just reflect on the benefits of reporting timeously. It's really a tool to create and further human rights, education and awareness. By this we mean that when you're in your reporting stage, you're really looking at, you know, what it is that has happened in the country, how it is that this can then be shared and assist and raise awareness in other African countries, and what it is that you're really needing to reflect on in terms of how to do things better. Another reference also for government planning, when we pause and we reflect and we do the reporting phase, it also tells us what has gone wrong, gives us the opportunity to replan and re-strategize around moving forward. And it gives us the opportunity to make choices that promote the development of a human rights culture within South Africa. Reporting also provides a very good benchmark for progress. If it is that we've set some standards, we can look at how far we've come. And as I said earlier, an opportunity for reflection and then to share the experiences and achievements that South Africa has undergone with other African countries. We thought that we would leave you with a few key recommendations. The issue around the reporting, particularly within the African Commission, as mentioned earlier, has been firstly the exclusion of civil society players. So there's been a lack of consultation with civil society. We often find that when civil society is consulted, there is a more comprehensive report that government can put forward, both at the UN level and at a African level. There have also been criticisms from the African Commission around the fact that there has been sufficient provincial information included in the report, and that the report wasn't thorough enough. Often South Africa has been called back to give further information, and that's not an ideal situation. We're wanting to give quite a comprehensive and thorough report so that we have a really a good formation of what it is that's really going on. So we want correct and comprehensive information. But more than that, our sense is that one government department needs to coordinate reporting. We're needing to look quite urgently at how it is, you know, we ratify these instruments, but as I said earlier, we have an obligation around reporting. So we're needing to look at how it is that coordination happens between government departments, and how it is that timeliest information is passed down so that these reports can in fact be handed in on time. We might also need to look at training of relevant government departments. For example, the African Commission issued a list of guidelines around reporting in 1989, and then it was criticized and it was said that these guidelines were too onerous, they were just too weighty. And then there was a new set of guidelines that were developed. And the sense is that these guidelines are a bit better, but still need to be worked on. I think that in terms of South Africa, if we can get a good reporting system underway, it's certainly something that we can also share with other African countries. If there's a port of focus or a person who is focusing or a department focusing on a report, then automatically and it would assist in ensuring that you have a good report, that the report is thorough and that the report is handed in timeously. And lastly, just to say that we're really excited that the committee is considering the ratification of this charter, because it is really a tool for ensuring democracy and for evaluating constitutional democratic values in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to then wrap up with what Anse was speaking about, what we have attempted to demonstrate to the committee is how the charter complements, strengthens, and enriches what we already have in South Africa. and that the charter is promotional in nature. I think the committee may also want to have possibly a more political discussion, which is the prerogative of the committee, to ask itself what is the message that this committee and this parliament are sending out to the rest of Africa around issues of democracy, elections, and good governance, and politically where would that place South Africa. The African Charter, certainly in terms of the content of the Charter, issues around democratic governance, holding regular elections, is really addressing African challenges and is providing African solutions to African problems. I think as well, we just wanted to highlight that building a human rights culture is not something which happens overnight. It's an ongoing work in progress. And some of the issues which Anthea has raised, which the committee could work on, is a continuous work in progress going forward, calling various government departments to see how they have taken on board this charter and to see to what extent it may have influenced some of the decisions, the programming or the planning of the department which is called here. I think we've also tried to demonstrate that the African Charter is yet another tool for this parliament and for South Africa to create another lens through which we can look at what we're doing and to which and to how far we are coming in ensuring that we achieve the ideals that are set out in the constitution. It also provides opportunities for us to constantly reflect and say, are we doing enough? Is there more that we can do? Because human rights can very often be a work in progress as we move forward. In terms of reporting, I saw lots of smiles from the committee. Just to say, at the Commission, we have been pleasantly surprised in recent months. It does appear that there are a number of government departments who are working very hard on various international reports, and we really hope that shortly, possibly in the new year, some of these reports will be coming through and that South Africa will be turning the corner and changing its current reporting status, which unfortunately is not good at the moment. But with that, I think we can open up for discussion amongst committee members. So if you'd like to ask us more questions, we will answer them gladly. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for such a brief, brief and comprehensive presentation. Honourable members, it's open for questions and engagement. Noted, Honourable Mugu and Honourable Chakwabas. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much to the two presenters for the very comprehensive, presentation. When I first read this charter a couple of weeks ago, when it was circulated to us, I really didn't quite internalize it as much as I have now with the presentation that we've listened to. Because, you know, usually some of these legal documents tend to be boring, and so you said you want to put it aside. But I think with the presentation, I pretty much understand what it's all about. Just a couple of observations. The presenter mentioned something around the fact that South Africa has not ratified the International Convention on the Rights of Migrant Workers, or this is besides, of course, the chapter that we're talking about. But I found that very strange that South Africa has a destination for so many migrant workers on the continent, particularly in the sub-region, that we still have not even ratified that. Because I think going back into history, South Africa has been a destination for African workers that come from all over the continent, working on mines and so on and so forth, agriculture. And also that we have not domesticated the legislation on the use of torture in terms of our constitution, considering also that we come from that kind of background where torture was extensively used against opponents of apartheid. So that's also a bit of a worrying factor to me. But some of our institutions being used as benchmarks. The Independent Electoral Commission, for example, that has taken participated in a number of elections on the continent and supervision and so on and so forth. So that, I think, it's a plus on our part. And sometimes, you know, we don't take ourselves very seriously, to take pride into just what kind of great country we are on the continent. So I think the presentation really for me was very good in terms of highlighting some of the things. I'm worried about the fact that there has been exclusion in terms of participation of civil society in a number of our endeavors, because civil society in this country is a very, very strong movement. I think much bigger than most African countries, where civil society has been oppressed and relegated to the back burner, particularly in places like Zimbabwe, where but here I think we have a good opportunity that we should use our civil society to participate in a number of our initiatives in this country. But also that I think we have set up very good governance structures that already exist in this country, the Human Rights Commission, and so on and so forth. So I would like to suggest that I think this committee takes this forward, and that we pretty much show the world that we can, Africa in particular, that we can lead the way and ratify this this charter. I'm very, very impressed about this. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would also like to align myself with the first speaker. Sorry, ma'am, I didn't get your name. When she did say that our constitution and a lot of our laws actually do speak to a lot of the areas that is contained in the charter, but I don't think it should make us rest and to say, okay, now we're fine, because also the issue of promoting all of that becomes an area that the second presenter mentioned and so on, and the sharing of experience and all of that. I stand to be corrected, Chairperson, when you look at the issue of vulnerable groups and specifically migrant workers. I'm not sure, and as I say, I stand to be corrected, there's a Labour Relations Amendment Bill that I think is still on the table of the Labour Portfolio Committee. And part of the things they're talking about there is the issue of brokering, or labour broking, whatever you call them, I don't speak English very well, is the issue of labour broking. And one would assume that that's probably the best area where some of these things can be addressed, the issue of migrant workers and so on, which is also what the colleague mentioned over there. That's the one point. The other point was when a question was posed to us when it comes to exchange of experiences. I would have thought one point where we exchange experiences would be through the Pan-African Parliament, as members of Parliament. And we have one of our colleagues that's sitting there. I think we have five members of South Africa. That would be one point of actual interaction, exchanging of experiences. But I actually want to throw the question back at you to say, have you actually looked at other ways that we can look at? Because we don't have the resources necessarily as committees or as parliament to actually go and exchange or to invite others here so we can exchange and so on. So that maybe it might have to be a creative way of actually exchanging through. There was a conference, and the member Hajjaj can correct me on e-parliament, you know, that was held 2 weeks ago at the Pan-African Parliament. So those might be creative ways, but I think it should be explored also by your good self, so that maybe you can concentrate on that to say, look, you know, these are ways that you can also interact with other members, member states. The issue of reporting, I hear that we are always late, mm-hmm. but you should know, South Africa, we have a very strong culture of participation. So although government submits a report, but it submits that report on behalf of the populace of the country. So you have to consult civil society, you have to consult the other NGOs, you have to consult sector organizations, and so on. Maybe I don't want to make excuses for government. If we're late, we're late. But I'm just saying that's the level of interaction that we have with the populace of the country. And maybe that's what makes us late. Maybe other countries just some person from the presidency just decides, I'm writing the report and there it is, you know, without people of the country actually knowing about the report that government has submitted on their behalf. We have it otherwise. And I think it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's a good thing. Not that we are late, but in terms of our interaction, we're much more vigorous in terms of interacting with the populace of the country. So I think we must actually take it in that light as well. Just on the general point, Chairperson, if you look at some of the provisions or the articles in the AU Charter, there's a lot of our sister countries that don't actually abide by some of these things, both in the region, as SADC, as well as in the rest of the continent. How is it? Maybe we should give some thought to some kind of a tool that we can use. And I don't want to say to force people, but there must be some kind of mechanism of enforcement. If you ratify, if you sign, these are the obligations on you. Your ratification, I think, is the last step, more especially if you've ratified. These are the obligations on you as a country to enforce what is in that charter. Otherwise, we can sign charters every day and say, well, fine, we agree. And then it goes nowhere. You know, it wastes our time as members of parliament sitting and interrogating. It wastes government's time appending its signature. And then it just means nothing to the people of the continent. So I think maybe somewhere there we should also try and look at some mechanism. I'm not sure what it could be. But yeah, thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member, Honourable Mukhalaba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for this committee it should be a very momentous historical moment for us because of we've been calling for this. I remember my first interaction with this charter was in Botswana last year when we had the IPU conference. And this charter was already being put on the map by then. But the challenge was the issue of the ratification because of most of the African countries haven't yet ratified. I think by then it was about two. It was only Ethiopia and Ghana. And I think since then there's been movement. It's about six of them moving. And the call there was, why are we not ratifying this? And I think for us as South Africa, yes, when we look at the charter, we've done everything by the book. But I don't think that it calls for complacency. We need to make sure that we strengthen what we have. So I have a very strong interaction with the charter, and my question has always been, why are we not ratifying it ourselves? And I cannot even want to enter into a debate about it. We just have to, it's one of those things that we just have to rubber stamp. I'm not for rubber stamping, but for this one I will make a provision because I think it's a very good document. It's been in the shelves, and I think most of the senior committee members would know that we've been pushing for this to make sure that it comes here. And if it's here today, we just have to make sure that it goes through. But the bigger challenge will be on us as South Africa to make sure that we make sure that the provisions of this charter are emulated across the continent. Because of it, like the African Charter of Human Rights, it's our document. There's nothing Eurocentric and imperialistic about it. It's ours, and we can adopt it and make sure that we spread the gospel across the African continent. And I think the onus again will be on us as the champions of human rights to make sure that it goes through. And let's start small with SADC, you know, and make it grow towards east-west where the challenges are very vast. But if we can make it work in the SADC region, I think we can emulate it quite further. And I'm happy with it as it is, and happy to know that the Human Rights Commission as well are here to endorse the provisions and to say to us as members of Parliament, the work is on your shoulder to make sure that you advocate this one and engage civil society. But that's part of our public diplomacy. We've been pro-civil society interaction, and I believe we will definitely engage civil society, but I move for adoption of the document, Chair. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Archange.
problem. The problem is, in some cases, ratification, and in most cases, the domestication of those charters into domestic law. So that's the domestication of those charters, and the same thing applies to this one. This is an excellent document, and if we have an we have an excellent overview. The point is, how do we use this document to actually promote the culture of good governance, democracy, good electoral law, equality, and all these things that affect our Bill of Rights and our Constitution has already done. So for me, there's no problem in terms of ratification of this thing, and even in large measure, we already have most of this domesticated in our law. Now, to propagate this into Africa, I think that is a challenge for us, and in my mind, it's also a duty for us. Of course, there have been some very good suggestions. We definitely need to use the Pan-African Parliament. We already have started debating this in the Pan-African Parliament. Although there's only 15 ratifications needed out of 53, I think it's really not good enough. There's only so far will be 7. So we need to work very, very hard. I think we need to go to SADC PF. Some of you, I'm sure, are sitting in SADC PF. We need to make sure that all SADC countries, all 14 of SADC countries actually ratify, and to make sure that they harmonize or domesticate the charter into the domestic law. Of course, we need to also speak to COMESA, because we have now started to speak to COMESA and the other regional economic communities like ECOWAS and all the rest of it, and make sure that these countries take this thing on board. This is a way that we can get a few countries together and just, you know, put this on the table and say, here is an excellent document. It encompasses everything that we've been wanting for. It covers the shortcomings that we experience in other charters and other protocols, like the Women People's Rights and the African Court and all of that. So I think we need to do that. The other thing that I think is necessary in South Africa is that we need to mount a media campaign to actually, we talk about civil society. We need to reach out to civil society through the media, through the radio, through the print media, through TVs and whatever. Maybe we can, request the SABC to start a series once a week or once in 2 weeks on every chapter of this document. And especially the radio, because the radio is very powerful, and the radio reaches our people in the farthest corners of our land where they're mostly isolated. The one other thing, I think in terms of the migrant workers, I think there are good reasons for the reason why we haven't yet ratified it. First of all, it is difficult to have a register. As you know, Home Affairs, since 1994, we inherited a Home Affairs that was in tatters. And for 10 years, it remained in tatters. It's just beginning now to be taken over, and some of the basic things that ought to have been done in 1994 is beginning to take place in terms of registering migrant workers, refugees, economic refugees, illegals, legals, and whatever. And unless we don't have a register of migrants or immigrants or whatever you, people, the foreigners that are in our country, it is difficult to ratify something. Because once you ratify, you have to make sure that whatever you have ratified is domesticated and it's implemented, because you have to report. And as we said, reporting is very important. So that is one of the reasons that we haven't. Until we have that in place, then I'm sure there's not. I think in principle it's not a problem. It's the problem of getting a register. Who do we register? Who's a migrant? Who's a true refugee? Who's an economic refugee? Those are not easy questions, comrades and friends. So those are some of the things that have come up. But if you look at in terms of the introduction of the objectives of the Charter, the democratic principles ingrained therein, the governance issues, the promotion of culture and democracy and peace, and of course electoral law, governance, an excellent chapter on governance. And here I want to draw attention to the fact that it talks, it has a very strong focus on the full and active participation of women and groups with special needs. I think the speaker did see. So and it's covered the whole gambit. It has covered the whole gambit. And as I said, my brother from the opposition said, that there shouldn't be, and of course, as you know, it's gone through the law, what's called the legal, the law advisors, and there's nothing that is contrary to our constitution in this charter. So if there's nothing contrary to this, to our constitution, I don't see any reason why we should not actually ratify it. Because the sooner we ratify, the sooner we say to Africa, the sooner we say to the world, we are serious about what's in this charter. And I think Africa, we as an African state that has a bit more clout and resources, has a special responsibility to make sure that we help. And lastly but not least, I think the Human Rights Commission also has a role to play. They have to make sure that they play the advocacy role. They directly with what you call it, and it hasn't always happened in the past, that's why I'm bringing this up, that their role is also to make civil society understand what is the document about and what are we trying to achieve. So they also have an important role to play. And with that, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ajaj. Honorable Sunduza.
Thank you, Chairperson. And greetings to honorable members and the presenters here. And I think I'll just add a few in terms of, number one, I want to speak more on public diplomacy, because I want to emphasize it, because really if we don't start there, people don't understand what is it that we're speaking about. And there's been a lack of emphasis, especially on international relations matter, to the public, you know. It's only domestic matters that are taken to a certain extent, but you must remember now, if we speak about the African agenda, this is where we start. You know, you must have a foundation that is good, starting from us. Obviously, South Africa, it's not a secret. It's always the juncture where everything of good governance, democracy starts. You know, every country in Africa, in all regions, they look at us, what is that term? We are called sisterhood or big brother, you know. But also to say that what we should make society in all the different aspects of society, is that this document, this charter, is for good governance. Because we are saying we want to change Africa, we want to transform Africa and remove the stigma around Africa. So this would be the document that toes the line of what we're speaking about. I want to totally agree with Honorable High Judge about that we must start in SADC and lobby our own. Because now I think we got the regions now, if not, and if we, it's busy, they, we've been making good relations with them. And I think it's very important that we lobby all of them. Even those who are not part of regions, we must not exclude them on these processes. Even those, the way we know that there is a turmoil, or we have to include them, because if they understand this document, then they'll understand that we are bringing out the stigma around Africa. I think if the opposition has says we must rectify it, then there's not much to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. I will give you. We thank you, Honorable Judge. However, we still need a quorum. Yeah, we still do. If you leave, it collapses. Thank you so much. I'll give you just briefly, very, very brief, just quick responses on some of the issues, and so that we conclude.
I really don't think that there is much for the Human Rights Commission to add. I think the honorable members have clearly, from their comments, have really studied this document, have given it a lot of thought, and are really going into it eyes wide open. And I think the one question that was posed as in terms of what Parliament could do, I think has already been answered by parliamentarians here in the room. And I think as soon as it becomes important to parliamentarians to promote this charter, one will immediately start seeing opportunities. They will come to you, those opportunities. And just in terms of, lastly, the Human Rights Commission and engaging with civil society, we are currently have a number of processes underway, which is really looking at, and it goes to the two last inputs around how we can include discussions around both the international and regional human rights law and embed it more firmly and ensure an understanding of it in civil society. So there is currently some very exciting work going on with the Commission and civil society. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick few pointers from my side. I think one of the areas that seriously needs to be strengthened, honorable members, is the fact that this document is only being dealt with now in terms of parliamentary processes for ratification, when in fact already in August 2007 the state law advisor, they had advised government about the constitutional issues pertaining to or the compliance of this document with domestic law. So that's one area that really means, you will recall, we have raised this matter on a couple of occasions with the department. This is not the only document in front of this committee for ratification that has taken such a long time. I think the last one was the CCW, and so on. So it's a matter that we really need to seriously flex with the department. Honorable members, I think, yeah, indeed, it's a momentous, I agree, it's a momentous occasion. It's historic in every sense, especially because South Africa has always provided good leadership and a set, an example for our sister countries. You see, we must continue to do so, but we will lose that strategic initiative if, we only receive the parliament these documents 3 years after the fact. We will lose that strategic initiative. Indeed, most structures are in place. We have our, human rights commissions and IECs and so on and so on. So in that sense, we are indeed at a pretty good place, but not good enough to be comfortable. Of course, we must always seek to strive towards improving, the issues pertaining to these human rights, governance, and so on, but also other aspects of our social, political, and economic life as a nation. We, as parliamentarians, are representatives of the people. And I think, as committee, as members of parliament, firstly, we must take that responsibility upon ourselves to ensure that we engage civil society on these and other issues. And it is really there that we will begin to promote. You know, it's senseless in looking to government to promote when in fact we are the direct representatives of the people in the first place. So we should be engaging with civil society on this. And these are some of the issues, of course, that we will have to reflect on as a committee in future deliberations. Also with regard to the experiences that we need to share with our counterparts elsewhere in Africa. I think we need to sit down as a committee and say, as a committee, what is it that we do? Because from time to time we meet with various delegations. We are in that fortunate position where we make contact, you know, with people from the rest of Africa. How do we use that unique position in really imparting our own experiences and learning from their own best practices? Because there's a lot of best practices as well in other African countries. And so we need to, you know, cross-pollinate, if you wish. Lastly, we also need to take a closer look, honourable members, in issues of reporting. This matter of reporting has been highlighted to us previously. It's a matter that as a committee we need to reflect on and really begin to deal with the matter actively, because in spite of all the good work we are doing, you know, elsewhere in the world, that very good work is undermined by our inability or, for whatever reasons, good or bad, it's neither here nor there, but when we are not able to produce those reports in time, they indeed impact on our reputation as an outstanding, you know, citizen in the global system of governance. Then finally, we also need to look at and I'm latching on to, I think it's Honorable Jacobus that raised the matter, that dealt with the accountability systems, both at the level of the AU and other institutes and other world bodies, but also as national parliaments. Indeed, it is like that. You know, these treaties and so on, they are signed, and, you know, and that there's pomp and fanfare, but that's it. That's where it ends in some instances. But I think it firstly is our responsibility as parliaments to say that, look, you have committed this country as a government to, in fact, we have committed this country to the following principles and set up the mechanisms, the accountability mechanisms to in terms of our broad parliamentary oversight models, to ensure that we hold government accountable in terms of compliance and advancement of these principles. So those are just some of the issues that I'm really lifting out of our discussions to say that these are issues, Bavala, that we need to further engage on those and the others that have been raised by the honourable members and the delegation from the South African Human Rights Commission. Lastly, what's that? Yes, can I just, first and foremost, there has been a proposal by Honorable Mukhalaba that he moves for the ratification of this charter. There is a seconder. Okay, it's seconded by Honorable Sunduza. There are no objections, I assume. Okay, honourable members, we thank you so much, ladies. We hope to see you quite soon on this and other matters. Thank you. Honourable members, there's one last point on the agenda that I hope we will quickly dispose of. No, we'll quickly dispose of it. No. We're not going to deal with any other business, honourable members. I don't know of such a point on an agenda. The minutes. Honourable members, before we rise, please, let's finalise these minutes. members.